Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yeah, baby, here we are. We're glad to be with you today. Man, oh man, what a frustrating day yesterday was. We apologize for that. Thanks to Ben and Bob and everybody who helped us get things sorted out here in the new studio. We beg your indulgence. New studio, new gremlins everywhere, and we're getting them sorted out one by one. But we're back today. We promise we're going to get John Dean rescheduled probably next week sometime. He was busy today and tomorrow, so we'll get him on soon. Had a nice conversation with John last night, and a very, very gracious and humble man. I really like John Dean. It's been a pleasure to talk to him over the years, and a highly intelligent man, and well, he's a great conversationalist too. So, looking forward to that next week. We got a great show for you today. Lots going on, and by the way, I do want to let you know right off, we've got our automatic answering system on today, so you'll be greeted on the phone and when you call, and we'll get to you as soon as possible. It'll take your calls for you. I've got a letter today that I got this morning from a soldier, I almost said in Vietnam, a soldier in Iraq, that I'm going to read for you in a little while. You don't want to miss this. You do not want to miss this letter. It's rather lengthy. I think I'll read the whole thing. It'll take a few minutes. But every single American that's back in this war, that doesn't think we ought to get out of there, needs to hear this letter today. So if you got a neighbor that you think you can convince, why, bring him in, let him listen to this. We'll get at this as soon as we can in the first hour sometime. I'm very anxious to have this letter read to you. What else we got on the schedule today? Just a lot. Nothing scheduled today. We're going to play it by ear. What a day. What a day. Here it is, another day that we knew would come. How many of you thought it was Cheney or Bush all along? How many? I always did. I always thought it led to at least Cheney, and probably that they might have insulated Bush from the whole thing. But you see, the one thing you got to remember, they didn't really have to insulate Bush in this, because you can't indict a sitting president. So, you know, maybe that's the kind of a deal they made. Bush said, you know, here when Libby and all them spilled the beans, probably said, well, let's tell him Bush did it, and, you know, just tell him the truth. He can't get indicted. But I'm not sure whether Cheney, the vice president, can get indicted or not. I don't know if it covers that or not. But, wow. But we all knew it. It's not a surprise, but it is a surprise finally that it all came out. And this is just the first of many. And I think we all know that. I was talking to John Dean last night, and it's the skies are going to open, and it's going to pour on this administration. I think that's becoming more and more obvious every day. I think they know it. They realize it. I think everybody realizes it, and I don't know what they can do to stop it. I don't know. But we got one rat out of Washington. Of course, he hasn't left yet. He's still there. But who knows what's going to happen here. You know, John Dean was in Washington testifying at the Russ Feingold hearing about the censure. And a lot of talk going on inside the Beltway about this FISA deal and the spying. That's big news inside the Beltway. You don't hear much about it anymore out here in the hinterlands. But it is big news. And I'm going to be fair here. I always try to be fair. And I'm going to be fair, and I'm going to give Junior Bush the benefit of the doubt pertaining to his illegal defiance of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA as it's better known. For those of you not clear on what this act states, it says that the government may not access electronic inspections of American telephone and email communications with people outside the United States without a court-authorized warrant. It should be known that, according to trusted sources in Washington, that Bush's lawlessness goes even farther. And this is the buzz in Washington right now. This illegal activity there's goes farther than electronic eavesdropping, because they may well have authorized warrantless break-ins and other physical surveillance by trashing the Fourth Amendment and opening, you know, going ahead and opening regular mail. You try doing that and see what happens to you. The administration says that Bush doesn't need approval from Congress to break the rules. He says Congress gave him the power to use such spying methods when it authorized the use of force to go after those involved in the 9/11 attacks here in the U.S. And he further shows the unbelievable arrogance of this administration by claiming he didn't need approval from the Congress because I think it was Article 2 of the Constitution, Article 11 of the Constitution allows him to take any action he wants to protect the Constitution. Man, isn't that something? The president thinks he's got that kind of power. Does this not seem a bit familiar to you? That kind of talk? Those of you that are a little long in the tooth like myself, remember back to Mr. Nixon. But back to giving Bush the benefit of the doubt for the sake of being overly fair, I will assume, and it's a huge assumption on my part, that Bush okayed the spying to keep future terrorists from attacking us again. I'll give him that. I'm going to be fair and say that's why he did it. That point I'm going to give you. But it's the other, far more sinister motive of his that I believe is the crux of the matter in calling his actions blatantly illegal. To this White House, and I think we've all been aware of this, grabbing more power for the executive branch is an issue. It's been an issue from day one. You remember Cheney making that statement right after they got told that they'd been appointed, that they're going to take back the power of the executive branch. And, you know, to be sure, Bush, no doubt being led by the nose by Cheney and his PNAC pals, they're seeking to add more power to the Oval Office, and that's really what this is all about. The thing is, can he do it? Is there a precedent for his actions? And apparently there is, albeit not the kind of precedent Bush wants to associate himself with. You see, it was Richard Nixon who set the precedent that they're trying to claim without using Nixon's name. Watch him dance around that. When you see a conversation going on with any of these guys, They're claiming precedent that other presidents have done it, and they're talking about Richard Nixon, but they don't bring up Richard Nixon's name. I love to watch him dance around that. Nixon claimed that his wiretapping was sanctioned by him to protect the nation's security. But in doing so, he broke the law. And Nixon was seeking to find out who was leaking information that was embarrassing the White House concerning the Vietnam War. It wasn't any national security that they were trying to protect. They were trying to protect their own asses. That's what it was all about. They didn't want this leaked information to come out about the war and the false figures and all that was going on. Nixon was trying to find, also, one of his big bugaboos was he was trying to find communists in the anti-war movement. He never did, and nobody ever did. But to do that, he broke the law. And we all know that. Nixon felt that he had a precedent for his actions, too, and I suppose you might argue that he did, in fact, have a precedent, and that was set by no other than the person of Harry Truman. And if you check out your history on this, Harry Truman sought to take charge of the steel mills in the nation rather than have them go out on strike and maybe hamper national security during the time of war in Korea. That would have been a bad thing. The steel mills shut down during wartime. And Truman lost that battle in the Supreme Court by a vote of 6-3, stating that Truman's takeover attempt was unconstitutional. And Bush, this is where this gets dicey. Bush is using the opinions of the dissenting voters on the court to try and take some sort of tacit approval for his spying actions. It doesn't work that way. The dissenting votes are dissenting votes. They're not the law. You can't use them for president. I'm trying to think who that was. I know that case. It was Youngstown versus Sawyer. He was Truman's Secretary of Commerce at the time, and they took it all the way to the Supreme Court and found out they couldn't more or less nationalize the steel mills during the Korean War. So along comes Bush, and he's trying to use this president thing, and you know, his arrogance really came to the forefront when someone blew the whistle on this whole spying caper of his, and he could have gone to Congress. Here's the part I don't understand. He could have gone to Congress right then and there and asked him to grant him the authority he wanted to continue the spying program. They would have given it to him, don't you think? He's got control of the Congress. He didn't. Why? Because they are so damned arrogant. They didn't feel it was anybody's business but the handful of his own people who conceived the idea in the first place. To hell with the Congress of the United States. Who needs them anyway? That's the attitude of the White House. George Bush doesn't need them. Screw the Congress. What do they know anyway? I mean, after all, Don Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Condi, and Bush, they've run a successful war in Iraq without people knowing what they're really up to. So who gives a damn what they think now? That's the way they think. They don't care who they crap on. So the question on everybody's mind now is will Bush get away with this? And I think the question is, as I see it, the answer is maybe and maybe not. Bush has portrayed himself and this action as being the ultimate defense mechanism to prevent more terrorist attack. He did it for God, country, and apple pie. He's gonna hide behind that fake patriotism crap again. What he will do is try his damnedest to keep this issue out of the courts. That he will do. He will try and bully his way through this and get his way. The thing that might derail that, however, is that there's an election coming this fall, and that will derail his plans to keep it out of the courts, if I see this right. If the voters decide to throw out the Republicans in Congress who are right now doing their utmost to block an investigation into this whole affair, then Bush has trouble. And if there's an investigation and it goes to court, most experts I've heard agree that he will lose in a court battle. So he wants to keep it out of the courts. And his saving grace may come in the Senate, where little Mikey DeWine from Ohio and Graham from South Carolina and Olympia Snow and Chuck Hagel, they've sponsored legislation that legalize illegal actions retroactively. So, you know, that's how the Republicans in Congress want to whitewash this whole mess. You robbed a bank and it's against the law, but hey, we'll make a law so robbing banks isn't illegal anymore. Okay? That's the simplistic way to look at it. But the real kicker for the Republicans in the Senate is the fact that Bush doesn't want any retroactive approval by Congress. He really does not want that. He wants to continue on doing it his way so he can set his own precedent, grab more power for the executive branch, and bypass Congress on important action issues like this in the future, so other neocon chief executives down the road will also enjoy absolute power without being shackled by that nasty, useless legislative branch of the government and the courts. So along comes Arlen Specter, who's, he's been in a pain in the ass for the Bush administration all along, and he thinks he's got the perfect solution to the whole problem. He wants to take the whole thing before the FISA court and have them decide the appropriateness of Bush's actions. He wants the FISA court to rule on a case-by-case basis. And, of course, the Bushes don't want this because they don't want to be fettered by any checks and balances in any damn court or legislature that they might impose upon him. Therefore, since Bush doesn't want this to happen, all he has to do is inform Denny Hastert of his wishes, and bingo, Specter's idea will be dead on arrival. And to be sure, Feingold's action is doomed to failure. Hell, he can't even get many Democrats to go along with him, let alone trying to persuade Bush's sock puppet Republican House members to go along with him. I guess the point of this all is, my friends, that the whole thing is up to you and me this coming fall. It's in our hands. If the Republicans lose the House majority, you can bet your bottom dollar there are going to be calls long and loud for Bush's political head through impeachment and untold numbers of investigations into the myriad of improprieties that are taking place in his administration. They will be after his ass, and rightly so. And if we can take the House, Bush will fall, and fall hard, and maybe... And maybe the most important part of this is, just maybe, we won't have to endure another incompetent, lying weasel like him again for decades to come, if ever. It's up to you. It's really up to you how this comes out. We've seen what a bunch of voices getting together can do, a la Tom DeLay. We've seen that. And it's our job to continue on with the pressure to make sure that we have an honest and open government. Because if there's one damn thing every American deserves, it's an honest and open government. That's what this whole business of the Constitution and the Revolutionary War and this whole business was about. An honest and open government of the people, by the people, and for the people. That's all we ask. Is that too much to ask? I don't think it is. It's something that every chief executive ought to take seriously, but this administration most certainly has not. Very definitely they have not. They just seem to have contempt for the voters in this country. They really do. 866-546-5254. I'd like to say hello to all of the people we hear from around the country. Gosh, it's good to hear from you. A lot of you emailed me yesterday and wondered, hey, what's going on? Is there a problem with my computer, or are you not there? And we, sadly, and I got to tell you, it was frantic here yesterday. We had everything in the studio fired up and discovered that the streaming didn't work. And so we get a hold of Ben. Thank God for Ben Birch, White Rose Society, and Ben gets a hold of Bob Kincaid, and Bob Kincaid gets a hold of the guy. Anyway, they call it over the phone. They get us to fix this problem, and it's great to have that kind of expertise literally at our fingertips. And thank you to everybody that had a part in that. Let me see here. We've got somebody on the phone. Hello, you're on the phone.
Hi, guys. This is Greg from Connecticut.
Hi, Greg. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you, too. Listen, I wanted to talk a little bit about this FISA thing.
Yeah.
Because one thing that you didn't mention, which I think a lot of people out there aren't aware, this FISA court, it's not exactly, you know, your Mr. Liberal organization or something. The FISA court is an extremely conservative organization, and it was basically designed by conservatives, so they're very much, you know, sensitive to the needs of, you know, the Bush administration. So since 1978, about 9 requests have been denied out of tens of thousands. So when Bush comes in with this excuse, oh, you know, we have to do it to prevent terrorism, that's BS. Because, you know, there's absolutely no reason that a reasonable request would be denied by the FISA court.
You're right on the money. Absolutely.
You know, and I challenge any of your Republican listeners out there to tell me why he has to circumvent the FISA court when the FISA court is there to meet his request and has granted his request in all but nine times. You know, it's absolutely ridiculous. Also, you know, a favorite claim of Republicans and other people is, well, you know, this doesn't matter because it's not going to affect me. If you don't have anything to hide, you don't have to worry about.
Oh, I love that.
Well, people out there should be aware, for one thing, they can now listen to conversations between you and your doctor. If you've ever looked at girly pictures on the Internet, they could be monitoring that.
There are girly pictures on the Internet?
You know, there might be. You know,
oh, my God.
I've heard. But, you know, they can use any excuse that they want to listen to a conversation between you and your attorney. Let's say you're going for a government contract, and, you know, Halliburton is interested in what you're bidding. Yes, they can monitor your information to use that information to their advantage, too.
National security.
National security. Just by under the guise of national security, they can do any of that. And also, for all your right-wing listeners, imagine what it would be like if President Hillary Clinton or President John Edwards decided that they were going to monitor you because you went to a Republican Action Group meeting or because you get a Republican mailing list. And that's the way things are. This isn't just being used against Al-Qaeda. This is being used against environmental groups, gay groups, anyone that they disagree with, even political opponents. So just imagine being a Republican and having President Hillary Clinton doing this to you and see if you feel the same way.
Well, I mean, you know, it's painfully obvious why they do that, though. You know, those gay people and they're you know, very much against national security. So we have to investigate. And everybody's reading habits. It could be reading subversive material at the libraries. We need to know that. And these phone calls and emails back and forth, you know, if you don't have anything to hide, isn't that I've had a couple of people say that to my face. And that's just to laugh out loud.
Well, and to think, you know, the Republicans are always talking about spending taxpayers' money. Imagine taxpayers' money being spent on observing a peace group or something like that. There was a story, you know, about a year ago. This girl was outside of a store in Georgia, a ham store. She had a sign that said, "Eat Vegan." And she was trailed by home security. They pulled her over and everything, interrogated her for hours. That is what your tax dollars pay for, tax dollars that aren't applied to port security or to monitoring real terrorists.
Man, oh, man. It's out of hand, and, you know, it's hard to convince middle America, average American, that it is out of hand.
Oh, really?
They're just going along, and, our government wouldn't do that to us.
Yeah.
You know, what's the old story? First they came for so-and-so, and I wasn't so-and-so, and finally they came for me, and there was no one left. That's what's... People don't want to believe that of this country, but it's happening right under their noses.
Well, of course it's happening. And, you know, that's the biggest problem of all. We think the biggest problem of all are people like George Bush. No, that's not true. The biggest problem of all is people who are apathetic, who want to sit on their ass and watch American Idol all the time and do nothing. I send out a mailing list. You probably see some of the people I send things to, and all the time with different articles and things, you know, and once in a while they'll write back and say, "Oh, gee, that's terrible." But do you think they'd ever get on a phone and call their congressperson or their governor or say, you know, this isn't acceptable? So, you know, if you listen to the Guy James Show and you never do anything, you never call your congressperson, you never write a letter or something, then you're just a hair better than the Republicans, really, I think.
That's right.
You've got to do something.
That's right. We've got to work at this system. We do. We've all got obligations. You know, anybody can row a boat when the current's going the right way. Anybody can do that. But when you're swimming upstream, things get tough, and you got to dig in, and you got to work hard. And now's the time when we are swimming upstream, and we better all, by God, dig in and put some pressure on our elected officials. We have to.
Yes, and if I could just say one last thing. You were saying, well, how are the Republicans going to get away with this? Well, I can tell you one way that they're going to try and get away with it. If you look at California, and I'm a native Californian, so I'm very concerned about this. First of all, Bruce McPherson has approved Diebold for California, even though, you know, it's been shown to have defect after defect. You know, it was not approved, it was not certified, but he said, we're going to use it anyway. And then in the past few days, in L.A. County alone, 14,000 new voter registrations have just been deemed invalid. You know, so we're going to have, you know, thousands and thousands of people not able to vote. We have Diebold working again. And I tell everyone listening, especially Californians, if we lose California, we're done forever.
Oh,
so
yeah.
If you're listening to this show and you're a Californian, don't just sit there. Get on the phone to the State House and call Bruce McPherson and say, why is this happening? You know?
I didn't know that about the registrations there. Jeb Bush must have called Arnold and told him it works so well here, why not give it a try?
Well, not just that. You know, Arnold, you know, he's just a pointer to – he's not winning by a huge margin right now. Angelides and other people are just a point behind or in some polls even equal. So, you know, he knows he's out too if he doesn't start thinking of something. So, you know, don't be surprised if Arnold, you know, has a slim victory and we have people like Francine Busby, you know, taking over that corrupt Duke Cunningham seat, you know, and she's ahead right now. But, you know, with Diebold and all these – seriously lost registrations, who knows what's going to happen?
Well, everybody better be wake up. Better be waking up. You know, the dead and the stupid never change their opinions. Well, people better get with it now.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Great to hear from you.
Thanks.
Excellent points, as always. Folks, it's up to us. It is most certainly up to us. You know it is. Let's stay on the ball here. Who do we have on the line now?
This is Alice.
Why, hi, Alice.
Humboldt County.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
I finally know where Humboldt County is. My webmaster lives out near Mount Shasta, and he told me all about it.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful country.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Guy, you're talking about the most corrupt administration ever. They're using their spy powers to watch those who would expose them. I cannot give benefit of any doubt. They are criminals who lie and steal and cheat every way they can.
And they just put another exclamation point on it today with this news that came out. You know, they didn't want anybody to know that, but here it is. It's public, finally.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think will happen out of this deal? Do you think that anything will befall Mr. Bush now on account of we know that he's the one that let the cat out of the bag?
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
it's hard to say what's going to happen there.
Well, I wish something big would happen.
Well, I think, you know the part, Alice, that really troubles me is, I'm afraid, Mr. Dean and I had this conversation, I'm afraid something big will happen, and something big will happen to take everybody's minds off of this. That's the great fear I have, and I don't want to say it's planned, I don't want to say it's intentional, but every administration, when they get in trouble, they look for a diversion someplace. And I'm afraid these boys are looking for one real hard right now to get their faces off the front page of the newspapers.
Oh, I wish I could perform magic, but I'm afraid this is beyond that.
Well, we're gonna keep working hard at it. We are,
we'll
all do our part. And you talk to your neighbors, and I'll talk to my neighbors, and we'll get this done. Got to move. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Have a good day, Guy.
What a sweet lady. And who do we have on this line?
Hi, this is Darden Rice from the Sierra Club.
Well, hello.
How are you doing, Guy?
Well, I'm good. I'm good. We must have got our signals crossed. I was told early this morning that they may have somebody from the Sierra Club called, but no one ever called me back, so didn't know about it. So we're flying blind here. You are wanting to talk to us about this extra millions of acres in the Gulf that they want to use to poke a bunch of holes in and possibly dirty up our beaches, are you not?
That's right, and let me just make sure I'm on the air, right?
You are.
Okay, great. Yeah, the Mineral Management Services, which is an agency under the Department of Interior that oversees oil and gas leasing, is having a hearing in Tallahassee today, actually right now as we speak, to solicit public input about their plans and the possible impacts of increasing oil and gas drilling off the coast of Florida. And, yeah, one of the things that the MMS is looking at is going into 2 million more acres and also going into our lease area 181. And one of the things that really just concerns us is Florida's coast and a large part of lease area 181 has enjoyed really strong support, both bipartisan, legislative, and administrative support, because Floridians know that this is, it's not only is it an important conservation issue, but it's an issue that's really important to our economy.
Oh, absolutely. If there was an oil spill where I live here on the west coast of Florida, the southwest coast of Florida, it would absolutely devastate this area. It'd be over with.
Yeah, you got it. Florida is the top destination spot in the world. More than 75 people visited Florida in 2004, which was a record number. And our tourism industry, you know, has an impact of $57 billion. We don't have a state income tax. So even the routine practice of the oil and gas drilling causes pollution, much less, just like you said, much less if there was a spill, it could really affect, you know, our economy in a horrible way overnight.
Can you give us an approximate location of these 2 million acres and the new lease and all?
Lease Area 181 is about 100 miles south of Pensacola, and it's about 230 miles northwest of Tampa Bay.
Okay.
So it's more up in the panhandle. It's sort of like a stovepipe-shaped area. And this is the area that we're really looking at. And it's an area, keep in mind that if there is a spill, oil tends to move along what's called a thermocline. And that means it moves to the part of the Gulf of Mexico that's the warmest and the most shallow. And, of course, that's our beaches.
Sure is. It's you've described the entire coastline of where I live here, the warmest and the shallowest. And our economy here in this particular area, Sanibel Island, Marco Island, Naples, Fort Myers, wow, it's totally dependent on visitors.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And also our coastline and our beaches, it's just part of the identity of our state. It's something that we're proud of. It's the reason why people come here, and there's a reason why people come here. We don't have signs on our beaches that instruct people how to get tar balls off their feet, and we're lucky that we don't have that. The other side of it, though, is that especially like when you're talking about Lease Area 181, there just simply isn't enough gas, natural gas or oil, to justify drilling. There's too little reward, too much risk. There's only about 6 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. America uses 22 trillion cubic feet a year. So really what we need to look at is conservation and continued reliance on renewable energies like solar power. There's so many ways through conservation efficiency we can save more oil than what we'll ever get from this area, and it's just too much to risk going in.
Let me ask you a couple of questions that I thought of this morning. Are things all back? Are all the wells back up and running after Katrina? The damage is done to the rigs and so forth. Was there any spillage? Did we get through that unharmed completely?
That's a great question. I don't have those exact statistics at my fingers. I've just left the MMS hearing to speak to you and heard a lot of folks discussing that. A lot of the rigs are not back up in production, and they won't be even before the next hurricane season comes along. And there was definitely spilling documented. A lot of the oil spills came from, I believe, tankers that became unmoored, and they are still not exactly sure how much of the oil came from rigs that snapped loose. But they're still trying to figure that one out. But I believe inside the hearing today, I believe I heard that 6 to 7 million gallons of oil were spilled with the recent hurricanes that came through this last season.
Oh yeah, and you know, if they don't fix them and fix, you know, if you mess up and you don't fix it, you're just messing up again, and we're flirting with trouble there. Another catastrophic hurricane come in, and if they're, I just worry for Florida. I'm not a native Floridian, but I've vacationed here for many years and lived here for quite a few now, and the idea of seeing the effects of an Exxon Valdez, if you will, on our coastline here. It makes you want to cry.
Absolutely, and it's a real concern. I think a few years ago, people were hesitant to bring up the threat of hurricanes and talking about oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico. But now everybody's taking that seriously because we've seen such a increased cycle of intense hurricanes, both in intensity and in frequency. It's irresponsible. It's definitely irresponsible when we have solutions at hand with renewable, with solar, with wind, with increasing the fuel economy of our cars and trucks. That's the direction we should head in, not putting more oil rigs basically in the path of hurricane alley.
And there's been almost little or no talk of conservation coming from this present administration.
No, unfortunately not. We're seeing the best movements in efficiency legislation come through the states. Right now, we really don't have much of a trend or support from the White House. And it's really a shame because I think that we have an opportunity where the American public would very much support stronger conservation measures and not see it necessarily in terms of sacrifice, but see it in terms of using our American ingenuity and technical know-how to solve our problems and not to wait for them to get worse. It's really a matter of good business and good management. It's looking down the road and preparing ourselves the best way.
Well, what's the prognosis for this right now? I mean, we've got our governor, we've got both of our senators. You would think the brother of the president, he'd have him on our corner. Well, how are we looking on this?
Well, Guy, we're not looking too good, to tell you the truth. But I think with a different administration in the next couple of years, I think we're going to see that when you look across the country, you see a number of cities, a number of counties that are undertaking what they call green cities resolutions, where cities at the local level are taking are implementing policies in sustainability and energy efficiency and just looking at what they can do within their own power. And I think this is like a grassroots thing that's happening across the country that eventually the next president, hopefully, you know, Republican or Democrat, will just not be able to avoid really pushing through some policy that shows, you know, more responsibility, more foresight, and pushing for a cleaner energy policy.
Isn't there talk?
It's our way to energy independence. That's just the bottom line. There's not enough oil for us to do it. The U.S. makes up, I think, a little bit less than 5% of the population, but we use 25% of the world's resources, and that's just the policy that can't continue. We have to conserve. We have to look at efficiency and look at our ways of technology to getting there.
Well, you're exactly right. I've heard talk that they're even talking about drilling in the Everglades ultimately. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know if that threat is something that's really hot right now. If you have a listener who's knows something more about that, I would encourage them to call in and correct me. But in the Everglades, we see more of a crude quality of oil. I would imagine with this current administration, there's really no place that's completely safe from being looked at for drilling. But I would say that really in Florida, we've enjoyed pretty strong bipartisan support for not drilling in our special places like the Everglades and our coastline. I think right now we need to be more concerned about what's happening in our coast than what's happening in the Everglades
good.
Right now.
Good. Well, we thank you so much for giving us a call and filling us in on this. This is a terribly important subject, not just to Floridians, but to all Americans.
Thanks, Guy. I really appreciate the opportunity. And just a reminder for your listeners that you can submit your comments online to the MMS service. I don't have the website, but if you go to the Mineral Management Services website, you can log on your comments to object to more oil and gas drilling. And the deadlines for those comments are April 11th. Mineral and Management Services.
And Management. I don't write that fast. Management Services. Okay. .com or org?
That would be a .gov.
Okay. Should know that. All right. Very good. We thank you so much for.
Thank you.
Take
care now. Bye-bye.
Yes, that's one that Florida's looking down the barrel of that gun right now. Hadn't known we were going to talk about that today, but I'm glad we did. I'm glad she called and let us know about it. You know, what it boils down to is everybody around the country that doesn't have any oil, they're kind of looking hard at Florida right now. Well, let's go get that oil. And I don't know. It would be a catastrophe if anything happened to the beaches, the beautiful pristine beaches that are up and down the west and east coast of Florida. And then that's something that's it's not just a Florida problem. If tourism in Florida goes completely to hell because of some catastrophic oil spill, it'll have far-reaching economic effects all around the country. It most certainly will. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Still, I'm waiting.
Yes, you're listening to the Guy James Show. So good to have you along with us this afternoon. Yes, indeed it is. Always good to have an audience so well prepared, so such great questions, such great comments, and we thank you for listening today. Tell everybody you know about the Guy James Show. We've got a lot of great plans, and boy, we've got some really exciting news to come down the pike here in a few days after we talk with a couple other people, but. You give us a call, 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. I'm going to get to that letter in a little bit, that I got from a soldier in Iraq at the urging of his father who lives here locally. Man, oh man, don't go anywhere. You've got to hear this. You have got to hear this. I mean it. I'm not doing a tease here. You want to hear this letter. We'll get to it probably right at the top of the hour, right after the top of the hour. You know, I wanted to weigh in again on this little tidbit, even though it was reported a few days ago. Of course, I'm talking about the revolution of the more complete details and conversations that took place during George Bush and Tony Blair's not yet infamous enough meeting in January of 2003, after they fixed the facts, had that little chat a few months earlier. And according to the New York Times, and quote the New York Times, at their meeting, Mr. Bush and Mr. Blair candidly expressed their doubts. Imagine this. Why isn't this a headline of every newspaper in the country? I am blown away that the major newspapers in the country haven't pounded this over and over and over again. To me, this is some of the most significant news, perhaps right after 9/11 and Katrina, that you're ever going to hear. And yet the newspapers, that liberal media, they've run from this story. Back to the New York Times. At their meeting, Mr. Bush and Mr. Blair candidly expressed their doubts that chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons would be found in Iraq in the coming weeks. They're doubting this, telling us they're absolutely there, but they're doubting it themselves, the memo said. The president spoke as if an invasion was unavoidable. The two leaders discussed a timetable for the war, details of the military campaign, and plans for the aftermath of the war. My question is, what plans? Were we not told with unshakable slam-dunk certainty that Saddam had stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction and that the continental U.S. was in, quote, imminent danger of terrorist attack with Iraqi chemical, biological, or nuclear, as in his words, weapons? Yet these men knew that nothing had been discovered in Iraq, they knew nothing would be found anytime soon. And at several points during the meeting between Bush and Blair, there was palpable tension, the Times says, over finding a legitimate legal trigger for going to war that would be acceptable to other nations, the memo said. So not only are they going to screw over the American people and tell them one fat lie after another, they're going to have to lie to all the other, this huge consortium of nations they were trying to put together that they never got done. The prime minister was quoted as saying it was essential for both countries to lobby for a second United Nations resolution against Iraq because it would serve as an insurance policy against the unexpected. Well, at least Blair had something decent to say in this conversation. And it goes on to say, Mr. Bush agreed that the two countries should attempt to get a second resolution, but he added that time was running out. The U.S. would put its full weight behind efforts to get another resolution and would twist arms and even threaten, Mr. Bush was paraphrased in the memo as saying. The document added, and I quote, but he had to say that if we ultimately failed, military action would follow anyway. So come hell or high water, no matter what, he was going to invade. My question is, didn't this president pledge, you know, and we've heard this over and over and over again, one of the crutches for the right-wing spin machine is, well, the Democrats all went along with this, too. They voted for it, too. Didn't this president pledge to Congress and the American people that war would only be an act of last resort? Didn't he pledge that? That sounds like proof, as we traitorous liberals have been saying for years, our unwarranted attack was a foregone conclusion, regardless of the evidence or the blessing of the global community that he never got. And despite intense lobbying by the United States and Britain, that UN resolution never was obtained. You know, and it's often said by those on the right, well, other countries, you know, well, they knew, they accepted the truth. Our leaders didn't. In fact, there wasn't any truth our leaders had to accept. They were making it up as they went along. So here I go back to that imminent part of imminent danger again. Why the rush? Were we not assured that every reasonable international diplomatic solution was being attempted before committing to the last desperate choice available to nations that need to resolve their differences? The sign that all else had failed? War? You know, a matter of weeks, it seems to me, is like the dare of a bully. The unrealistic and arbitrary deadline imposed by someone just itching for a fight, and that guy itching for a fight was George W. Bush. He wanted this fight. He wanted this fight even before he took the oath of office. He wanted it. We know that. He planned for it. He wanted it. This is criminal. I don't say that lightly. This is criminal. If a president of the United States can't be convicted in an impeachment trial for this, what could you be impeached for? We're going to impeach somebody for a stain on a blue dress. That profited only the dry cleaner. Well, I guess they didn't get it dry clean. That's why she saved it. Do you see the folly over this thing? Why don't all of the level-headed people in this country see this? This is something that just absolutely blows me away. We had a president of the United States that planned from day one, from the moment even before he knew he'd got appointed to the office, that he was going to go to war in Iraq, and he was going to take the British along with him and anybody else he could con into doing it. And he didn't give a damn what the Russians said, the Germans said, the French said. Made fun of them all, didn't they? Do you remember how they made fun of all those other nations that wouldn't go along with us? Do you remember that? Who's laughing now? Only it's not funny. You know, what's most outrageous to me is not that these conversations took place. The aspirations of these key policymakers in this administration have been no secret since they were charter members of the PNAC group in the late 90s. What I find shocking is the very lack of sustained outrage in our traditional media. Where is it? And the general populace over this and previous revelations about Bush's plan to invade Iraq from the moment he and his cronies assumed control in 2000. Imagine for a moment, if you can imagine this, if similar evidence had surfaced that Bill Clinton had knowingly manipulated this country into an unnecessary, unprecedented, preemptive military attack that has bankrupted us, killed and maimed tens of thousands of brave American citizens who believe that they were protecting their loved ones from an immediate threat of known nuclear terrorist. And as a previously released passage from the same memo indicates, actually looking for ways to provoke an incident that would serve as some sort of justification for his self-serving commitment of our country to a world of all war all the time? Have you seen this guy walk around boasting that he's a war president? Have you not seen that? Have you seen the grin on his face when he says it? I'm a war president. You know, people look at George Bush oftentimes like he's stupid, and we make fun of his intellect because there's obviously not a lot there. But we should be terrified of this man. Terrified. This entire country should have... Oh. You know, but imagine, if you can, Bill Clinton doing this. The guy would have been publicly crucified on primetime television, probably. You know, the same crowd has been relentless in its criticism of Clinton for not dispatching with bin Laden on his watch to begin with. So, the point is, what I'm asking once again, the part of this that's just gotten me absolutely buffaloed is, where is the collective outrage? Where is it? Where's the rush among our congressional officials to support censure? At the absolute damn least, a president who's been proven to be such a two-faced liar, where are the front-page 70-point headlines and lead news stories every weekday evening about the fact that our dear leader didn't really even expect to find WMDs in Iraq, but basically sold us on the images of nukes for sale at the bazaars on the streets of Baghdad? That's the way he painted the picture. Where are the blistering editorials and angry letters to the editor and the calls to radio shows from a furious public? Where are those? What the hell is going on in America that they can allow something like this to happen and not say anything? I'm outraged by this. And the more I talk about it, the angrier I get, and so should all of you. The public needs to rise up and demand the removal of this incompetent, disastrous CEO for the good of the corporation, our corporation. My question to the public is, not to my listeners, I guess, because they all know better. When is enough enough? When will the general populace of this great nation stand up and say, we've had it? I don't care if I'm a Republican and I've voted Republican all my life. We need to throw this guy out of office and take everybody he took in with him along with him in disgrace. This is an outrage. Not only an outrage that he's done this, but it's an outrage that the people of this great country are letting him get away with it. I never, in my wildest dreams, ever thought the American public would allow something like this to happen and overlook it, be willing to overlook it. when the facts are on the table for everyone to see? And you've literally got these people in the White House going, yeah, 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 you can't do anything to me. That's what's happening. What's wrong, America? These people. You know, you wallow with pigs, you're going to get dirty. And there's never been a more piggish group in Washington than this group that's there right now. I am shocked by all of this. I really am. I can't get this through my head. And I hate to keep beating on it, but I just can't get it through my head that this is going on in this country of ours. I can't. It's the most amazing thing I think I've ever seen. Not the fact that they've done it, because I knew they would. I knew they would. I predicted they would. I predicted from day one that they would rob, rape, and pillage this country and grab every dime and every ounce of power that they could get. I predicted it from day one. So I'm not disappointed. I'm not surprised. But I am surprised at the American public. Surprised and terribly, terribly disappointed. Terribly disappointed. Never been so let down about the people of my nation, my fellow Americans. You know, we have a great amount of trust in one another in this country. Human beings have kind of a tacit trust for one another as it is. I think if you didn't trust your fellow human beings, you wouldn't be able to drive a car down the road, would you? You wouldn't trust the guy coming at you, but what, he wouldn't hit you head on. We've all got a certain amount of trust. We do. And we give these Bush people the trust that they don't deserve. Some of the great people in this country have given them trust that they just don't deserve. Have bestowed the trust of the American people on this administration, and they've taken it and they've walked on it, they've stepped on it, they've trashed it. They've trashed the Constitution, they've trashed the Bill of Rights, they've walked all over the American people. And a certain amount of American people are willing to sit back and say, hey, give me some more. That wasn't enough. God help us. God help this great nation of ours if we're going to put up with stuff like this from now on. I don't know. There's hope. People are starting to talk. Our little voices out there. There are other voices out there. We hope. We hope we can get this thing shaped up somehow, some way. We hope we can. But it's up to us. Definitely up to us. We're going to be going to news in just a couple of minutes, so don't go anywhere. We're going to pause for 5 minutes of news at the top of the hour. We think, where are the news people at today? Nothing ever works right the first time around, does it? I guess not. They're on the line now telling us about the news rather than doing the news, so they're, I don't know what's the matter with them. Anyway, they're not doing the news right now, so I'll just wait until they do. We'll keep an ear out here and see what's happening with them right now. Well, anyway, we're going to stop for a break right now, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, hello, hello. 5 minutes after four, where we're at. Almost 6 minutes after four. I guess we didn't get any news there, but you don't need news, do you? We'll keep you up to date on the very latest here. Sorry to get a little preachy there in that last hour. You know, they always say the best sermons are lived, not preached. But we've been trying to do both on that. We've been living that. We've been working over our Congress critters and our senators and trying to do that all around the country. And I know a lot of you are, too. So we'll perhaps get something done about this. That's important, very important. Stay tuned because I'm going to go to that letter in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to take a call or two here, and you can give us a call at 866-546-5254. That's toll-free, 866-546-5254. We'd love to hear from you. Right now, we're going to go to the phone. Who do we have with us?
Guy, you got Dave out in California.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Oh, really great, and you weren't being preachy at all. I think you come very close to calling it as it is, and I think America very much needs to hear that. It was a most ambitious plot these PNAC folks came up with. A very evil, vicious, but a very, very ambitious plot.
You're right, Dave, and it was so ambitious that people wouldn't even believe them. Believe us when we told them about it, would they?
It's like nobody wants to believe.
No.
You know, it's so outrageous to think we have psychopaths that have just literally stolen our government, and they've taken away our free press, and they've taken away our honest elections. They had a master plan, and it involved wiping out our treasury and shifting it to Bechtel and Halliburton and General Electric and themselves. And I don't put much of anything beneath them, and it keeps popping into my head the earliest days there at the PNAC of, and we will need a new Pearl Harbor to get the people to support our invasion.
You know, Dave, the last time I was at Washington National Airport, I refused to call it what they're wanting us to call it now. But the last time I was in Washington National Airport, Bill Kristol went walking through there. And if I'd have known what I know now, I should have smacked him right upside the head. He was, he's one of the founders of the PNAC group. And we all know that. But you're right, Dave. You know, that was so preposterous. When we all found out about PNAC and we started telling people, people would look you in the eye and go, no, that's not true. They wouldn't believe it.
They literally have stolen our democracy. They do not care how many people they harm. They want it all for themselves. Dreadful, dreadful people we've got.
Well, I promised, I told somebody I wouldn't say this on the air, but I'm going to. What's the difference between somebody that... for example, a mass murderer that we catch here in this country and take to trial, what's the difference between that and somebody that willingly takes us into a war where thousands of people get killed? What's the difference?
And knowing that they're lying to get people to support it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Uh-huh. No radio announcer wants to say it, but all the evidence says to get the people's support for the invasion, they brought 9/11 down on us.
Well, they said they needed that Pearl Harbor. They said they needed it.
Yes, indeed. And I don't think Bin Laden had any way in the world of even planning detonating explosions in three buildings. He had no way of holding our Air Force on the ground.
Well, now, Dave, you brought up an important subject. What you just said, is it likely, and this is great food for thought for people, I mean, is it likely that a guy out in the middle of Afghanistan someplace had the wherewithal and the smarts and the technology and everything else to plan this, it was a very intricate operation.
I suppose he had some small part to play in it, but if you recall, the Bin Ladens have been doing favors for the Bushes for a long time. Well, they've been in bed together on all kinds of deals.
Yeah.
And if we wanted him caught, he would have been caught.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing.
Such dreadful criminals, and you do say it. I mean, you spell it out for us. We need a free press again. We need people to hear this on the news. They say, and they honestly mean it, if you think that was true, don't you think we'd be hearing that on 60 Minutes? Would we not be hearing that on Meet the Press? Would we?
Oh, yeah.
No?
They say it every day.
Somehow they have tied their hands on it, and no longer do we have a free press.
No.
So thank heavens we still cling to a few small... But you know, we need you everywhere, Guy.
Well, we're working on that. We've got some good things coming up, we think, and in conjunction with some other people. And we're looking forward to.
I know. All right, brother. Thank you so much for
Dave. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Well, my pleasure.
Since Dave brought this up, right now I was going to wait till a little later, but I want to read you the most sobering letter that I've ever gotten from anybody in Iraq. I'm not going to give you his last name. Sergeant Lawrence, and we'll do without the last name. He's currently stationed in Mosul. And I want you to listen closely to this, because if this doesn't cause outrage, if this doesn't nail down the truth to some of you who doubt what's going on, if this doesn't make you realize the facts of what's happening in Iraq, I don't know what will. I really don't. Dear Mr. James, I've been asked by my father, who lives in Naples, Florida, to send you this message. He's been a lifelong Republican and voted for President Bush during the 2000 election. To my knowledge, my dad has never voted or spoken kindly of any Democrat running for office. He's been a Republican all of his life, but by the same token, I've never heard him speak negatively about any Republican president. He adored Presidents Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. He has related to me on several occasions that he even respected Richard Nixon as a very able leader. But now he's had enough. Things have changed since I have been deployed in Iraq. I'm an infantry sergeant, and if you don't mind, I will not disclose my unit for fear of reprisals against me and my men. There are 23 of us in my unit, and more than half of us are serving our second tour in this godforsaken country. I will tell you that there is not one man in our unit that thinks this war is anything but a huge mistake. Some, at first, accepted it as their patriotic duty to come here. Some even volunteered for duty in Iraq. Most all of us initially thought we were here doing the right thing. We were going to provide liberty, freedom, and democracy for these oppressed people. Well, things have changed. I do not personally know one soldier, not one, under the rank of captain, who thinks we should stay here one more day. We are being used as cannon fodder for some sort of demented ideas thought up by suits instead of soldiers. It is a given that military men could not have planned this campaign because it reeks of massive failure on the part of the United States that we serve. Sir, my father keeps me apprised of the latest news, and it troubles me to hear that the Bush administration is outspreading lies about what conditions currently exist here. I hear that the American media is being criticized because of not reporting enough good news. The plain truth is that bad news outweighs good news by at least 100 to 1. The good news President brags about just isn't there. Oh, I believe there were some good intentions initially, but all of that is broken down into chaos. Originally, we were going to rebuild the infrastructure of the major cities damaged by hostile action. Fine and dandy. Let's do it, we said. Well, the civilian contractors from Bechtel, Kellogg, Brown, and Root descended upon this place with their armies of private killers, and other than provide substandard food and services, they have done nothing other than inflame the passions of the local Iraqis. They are hated, and we know full well that much of the hate has been transferred to American soldiers just doing what they're here being ordered to do. Some of the private soldiers of fortune, and that's what they are, make no mistake, they're mercenaries. They have no regard whatsoever for the lives of the Iraqi people. They sometimes shoot them for sport. I'm serious. I have firsthand knowledge of this, and so do many of my men. They think nothing of taking what they want from the Iraqi merchants who fear being beaten or killed if they don't give these hired guns what they want. These men are a disgrace to our flag, but then they don't represent our flag. They represent the dollar bills being thrown at their companies who've made a mockery of the vision these Iraqi people had of Americans as honest, kind, and merciful. Now the Iraqi people hate us, and those of us in the military know why, and it's tragic because we thought we were here to help them. They thought we were here to help them, and we thought we were sent here to help them. And as it turns out, the Iraqi people and us were both wrong. I could go on and on telling you about the many incidents of graft and corruption taking place every day right in front of our eyes, and we are ordered to look the other way while these private companies steal billions of dollars from the American public. money that could do so much good. The American people's money could be so well spent here if only someone had control of the situation and put an end to the widespread thievery and corruption by these American companies. I have notified my superiors of several outright robberies that I and my men have seen with my own eyes, and nothing has been done. The morale of our troops is lower than I ever thought it could be. If you are being fed pictures of happy soldiers stationed in Iraq, then you are being badly misled by the press. I fear the press has been almost totally controlled by our government so as to put the best possible light on this war. I will stay here as ordered and fulfill my duty to the military of the United States of America as I swore to do. I am honor-bound to do that. But when I get back home, I intend to find people who will listen and expose the real truth about this war of so-called democracy that we are losing. Respectfully, Sergeant Lawrence, currently stationed in Mosul. That about says it all, doesn't it? Doesn't that just say it all? I've read that letter half dozen times to get the full effect of it. It's more than any American soldier ought to have to bear. Things are way out of hand. We got our kids over there getting killed every day. Maimed and killed. And I have some of you on the right send me letters that I overdo that. Can that be overdone? Can it? Can you talk too much about American lives are being wasted in a foreign land for no reason? Can you talk too much about a story that's been put out by the White House? A lie? Can you say too much to expose that? Can you ever overdo that? I don't know. I don't think so. I really don't. I was shocked by that letter. I really was. And by the way, maybe on a little bit lighter note, I hate to disappoint so many of you who continually ask, where's the Republican Love segment? Something unusual has happened. The cold hard fact is that these right wingers have, they've let their guard down. They're becoming more civil. The letters I'm getting from the right nowadays aren't so nasty. Aren't so profane. Could it be that they're beginning to see the light? Could it be that they now have their doubts about their boy in this administration? Hmm? Really? I've gotten lately 8 or 10, probably closer to 10, really good letters from people on the right. And you can see doubt written all over them. They want to debate you a little bit. And they usually put forth the usual talking points, you know, the ones that have been drummed into them by the druggie, Limbaugh, and Hannity, and Laura Ingraham, and those folks. They're very good. They're very good. They've been masters at propaganda, and they have programmed millions upon millions of people to accept that black is white and white is black, to ignore the truth and accept propaganda as their truth. They're good. They are. I'll never dispute that. But the letters have been most interesting. They really have. I don't know. It just like it turned on a dime here about a week ago. I haven't gotten a really rotten letter for a while now, and it's, you know, kind of worries me a little bit, you know. But anyway, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We hope you'll give us a call today. We'd love to hear from you. You know, I was going to lay off Tom DeLay today, but I was reading something he did the other day, and I just couldn't resist linking to his address to the constituents of the 22nd District of Texas, if for no other reason than to remark that it's an invaluable example of the total denial and self-delusion that have come to characterize the 21st century Republican Party, or at least those of its members who remain blindly loyal to the empire of George the Bush, the Jr. Let me give you a few highlights of what he said to his constituency back in the 22nd District of Texas. And I quote him here. At home, and keep in mind what I said about propaganda earlier and these propagandists of the right wing. Maybe he'll get his own talk show because he's damn good at propaganda. And I'll quote him. At home, we moved from policies that had long empowered government to finally empowering citizens, taxpayers, and communities, initiating sweeping and positive change all across the facets of American society. Brother, ain't that the truth? There's been some change, but it's not positive. It's been positive for the upper 5%. And back to his comments. We adopted year after year of tax relief, which led to growth so strong, it has not only propelled our economy, but has spurred economic growth across the globe. We reformed welfare. Really? Moving tens of millions of good Americans from poverty to work and opportunity. We passed litigation reform to begin freeing our economy from the shackles of frivolous lawsuits. And we approved reforms in energy, telecommunications, transportation, and other areas as well, all of which had been bogged down and blocked by those who ran Congress for the 40 years before our election. You know, according to Tom DeLay here, they have performed miracles. And he goes on to say, it has also been an honor to work closely with one of Texas's favorite sons, a president with great, oh, you'll love this part, especially coming out of his mouth, a president with great moral integrity. Great moral integrity. Can you say that in the same sentence with George W. Bush? Great, great moral integrity and leadership? George W. Bush, his administration has done much to restore the type of principled leadership that President Reagan demonstrated and that first drew me to seek service in our nation's capital. Oh, stop it, Tom, you're killing me. With the news of my decision, there, of course, will be great speculation among the political pundits and media about my reasons both for this decision and its timing. I am quite certain most will put forward their opinions and conclusions devoid of and unencumbered by accuracy, facts, and truth. So I thought I might try to make everyone's job a little easier. Aha, going to strike early here. He's going to try and put the fire out before it gets started. And my favorite here from him, I know firsthand how important it is for Republicans to maintain their national majority. A Democrat Congress in 2007 would, without doubt or remorse, raise hundreds of billions of dollars in taxes. He knows this, I guess. Summarily cut and run from the war on terror. I guess he knows that. And immediately initiate an unconstitutional, this is the part I like, and immediately initiate an unconstitutional impeachment of President Bush. An unconstitutional impeachment of George Bush. I wonder what he means by unconstitutional. I don't know. However certain such antics might make a Republican resurgence in 2008, the times are too grave to waste even 2 years in the life of this nation and allow even one more vote for their agenda of pessimism and failure. Well, 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 Tommy, I don't know which is worse, the sheer arrogance reciting such a laundry list of blatantly false doublespeak that can be so easily disproved, point by point by disingenuous point, except, of course, that impeachment prediction, which we can only hope is true, or the thought that DeLay might actually believe this drivel. No matter, the hammer has fallen. It is truly time to rejoice. But we must remember to make this victory dance a short one, because the type of corrupt government that delay was instrumental in creating is going to continue to threaten the very foundation of our great democratic experiment. John Nichols wrote an article in The Nation, and I'll quote John. "Histories of this dark passage in the American story will record that no political figure fought harder or longer to dismantle traditions of compromise and cooperation in Congress than DeLay. A man who targeted those with whom he disagreed as zealously as he had once gone after the vermin he chased in his previous career as an exterminator. As far as DeLay was concerned, the niceties of democracy were a cruel impediment to his new career path, so he went to war with the process itself on behalf of his own political advancement and that of the paymasters in the industries he served more diligently than his Texan constituents, his conservative ideology, or his Republican Party. DeLay will soon be gone, and there's good chance that he'll be convicted of at least a few of his crimes against democracy. But his greatest crimes will go unpunished, at least for so long as the Congress Tom DeLay created and the presidency that he made possible continue to punish America and the world." That last section there come from John Nichols from The Nation. We'd like to thank The Nations and Smirking Chip, Democratic Underground, Hue and Cry, several great websites around Democrats.com that provide a lot of great research material for this show. I don't know how we'd get along without them. I really don't. And all of you, so many of you. But don't you love it when Tom DeLay starts quoting scripture and all that? I was trying to think who it was. I believe it was Pascal, who was a French philosopher, I don't know, 15th, 16th century back in there. He always said, men never do evil so cheerfully and so completely as when they do so from religious conviction. Always remember that. Always remember that. I see guys like Tom DeLay, and I think with religionists like DeLay and company, who needs Satan or the Antichrist, huh? Good riddance. Good riddance to all of them. I hope they're all gone sooner than later. Yes, indeed. Hey, we're going to stop for a break right now, and you can give us a call if you like, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Love to hear from you.
You know, a friend of mine came up to me the other day and she said, "I understand what you're saying, Mr. Speaker, but what can I do about it? I can't do anything." Well, if you believe that, folks, we've already lost. But the truth is, this is a democracy. Every voice counts. Just when I thought my voice didn't count, it showed up on the AP Network News. So don't ever think your voice doesn't count. I'd like to give you a few suggestions of what you might do. And the bottom line is this: you've got to speak out. Speak out. That's what democracy is all about. That's what democracy is all about. How many of you have ever written to your congressman? It takes about 5 minutes of your time. Most of them have emails now, so you can just go on your computer, email it right to them. How many of you have ever written a letter to the editor? I've had about a 30% success rate writing to my local newspaper, so give that a try. How many of you have ever called into your local talk radio show? That's kind of fun to do. If you're afraid, hey, I'm afraid every time I call in. But if you let your fear rule you, then we've already lost. Remember, what you have to do, you've got to speak out. Speak out. That's what democracy is all about. That's what democracy is all about. For
those of you who are really ambitious, run for office. Or just go to your local meetings, go to your school board meetings. Or you can go to some of the local protests. I went to the Portland protest against the logging policies of George Bush. About 3,000 people there. You say you're afraid? A lot of us are afraid. But then it occurred to me, why should I be afraid of free speech in a country that stands for free speech? We can't let our fear tell us what to do. So I decided what I had to do. I had to speak out. Speak out. That's what democracy is all about. That's what democracy is all about. So I've got one last thing I'd like to leave you with. My friend also said,
you guys are always against everything, but what are you for?
So I'm going to just give you the short list of what I'm for. I'm for affordable health care for all Americans. I'm for preserving our Social Security. I'm for cleaning up our air and our water. I'm for fixing our economy. I'm for education for all kids. I'm for affordable housing. I'm for food for the hungry throughout the world. I'm for preserving our free speech. I'm for aid to the disabled. I'm for alternative energy sources and getting off this oil bandwagon. I'm for AIDS research. I'm for civil liberties. I'm for finding ways to get along with the rest of the
world. You know, it's about time we Democrats start letting people know what we're for. And it's I like that little piece because of that. We're for a lot of things and many things. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show. Coming up on the last half hour of the program today, do want to let you know you can give us a call, toll-free, 866-546-5254. I've done a lot of the talking today. I'd like to hear from some of you. And right now, we'll just go to the phones. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Guy, Bush Eats Beef, Democratic Underground.
Hey, good to hear from you, buddy.
Listen, I just dropped a link in your thread on Democratic Underground. Somebody had posted this on Think Progress. There's a video and a transcript of Bush's little photo op this morning in North Carolina talking about the war on terror, and some guy went off message and said to him, what I wanted to say to you is that I, in my lifetime, I have never felt more ashamed of nor more frightened by my leadership in Washington, including the presidency by the Senate, and then the audience started booing, and then he said, I feel like despite your rhetoric, the compassion and common sense have been left far behind during your administration, and I would hope from time to time that you have the humility and the grace to be ashamed of yourself inside yourself. I also want to say I really appreciate the courtesy allowing me to speak for what I'm saying to you right now. That's part of what this country is about.
Is this guy still alive?
I don't know. I don't know. But and I apologize. I just found it. I know it's late in your show to bring it up, especially when you haven't had a chance to see it, but I thought maybe you could take a look and address it a bit tomorrow or something or whatever, or just for your own amusement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how did he get to do that?
I don't know. I mean, the only thing I can think, I haven't even had a chance to read it. I posted it rather quickly in your thread because I wanted to catch you before you went off the air today. But the only thing I can think is that he, you know, signed his loyalty oath or whatever, and then when he actually got the microphone in his hand, things changed.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's...
But it's a very lengthy thing on Think Progress. When you have a moment, I'm sure you'll enjoy it, and they do have the video there, too.
Okay, thinkprogress.com?
Yeah, the link's in your thread on
Democratic
Underground.
Oh, yeah, I see it there now. Okay, yep. Good. Hey,
all
thanks.
Right,
that's going to be some good reading there.
Take care. Talk to you soon.
Ooh, man, the cojones that guy had.
Yep.
I tell you, they're, to my knowledge, that's the first time that's happened. That anybody's really got to Bush like that.
Well, it's the first time, and, you know, I don't know what Bush was thinking, because when the audience started booing, he interrupts and he says, no, go ahead and let him speak. So, I mean, maybe he thought the guy would look tinfoil hat and crazy, and maybe he thought public opinion and the audience would just turn against the guy and he wouldn't really be heard. But I'll guarantee you one thing, it's posted on Think Progress, but you won't see this on the CBS Evening News tonight.
That's what I'm talking about earlier. Where's the press? A guy does something monumental like that, and he lived to tell about it probably, and they didn't drag him out of there after he got a few words. That's amazing. That really is.
Yeah, well, in conjunction with the letter you read earlier from the soldier, I mean, it's out there. It's out there. It's just not, you know, the complaint from the Bush administration about, oh, they're not reporting the news about the good news in Iraq or whatever. The media is not reporting the soldiers who are sick of this, who are watching, you know, the corruption, who are watching the Iraqis get shot down for sport. And if people are hearing this and don't know what I'm talking about, they can go to White Rose later and listen to the MP3 of the show and listen to you read that letter, which I would encourage them to do. But there are people like this that probably sit in those audiences and hear Bush talking about how he's protected us and how Iraq's a wonderful place of freedom and everything else, and they've just had enough. You know? It's like they're talking about the compromise today. Harry Reid is talking about how they're going to be dancing later this evening over the wonderful compromise. Guy, I missed the part where Bush didn't get what he wanted. You know, he got what he wanted. He got the guest worker program. He got basically everything he put on the table. Where's the compromise?
Well, that's a typical Harry Reid compromise, isn't it? I'll give you everything you want, and I get nothing, and we've compromised. That's how it works.
It is, and I posted something rather cautiously on Democratic Underground this morning when he made that statement about the dancing, and it made me sick, because if these are our leaders, if these are the people that are going to bring about change and you know, wipe away the corrupt regime we've got now, I just don't see it. I don't see how giving Bush everything he wants is going to take him out of power.
And you know as well as I do, so you got your courage up, and you've always got plenty of that. So you post that on a major internet site, and there are going to be people, good Democrats, they're just going to flame away at you for that. How dare you speak against our leader and all that? I mean, there are people that agree with you, and certainly Democrats that don't agree. I don't think Harry Reid, I mean, I'm not going to apologize for saying it. I don't think Harry Reid's any kind of a minority leader at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's standing up there with Frist having his photo op, and I look at the tech. I've read several articles today on what this entails, and it basically entails giving Bush everything he wanted. I mean, the news, if you want to believe it, is basically that Vicente Fox, on his way out of office, took one last shot at getting his agenda, and Bush basically gave it to him. Mm. I mean, other than just having no border, other than just saying, from now on, there is no border, you come and go as you please, which is what Vicente Fox wants. All of the other stuff, that, you know, not sending home anyone who's already here, you know, guest worker program, the whole thing. And plus, Bush talks about the Democrats want to raise taxes and everything else. Who's going to pay for administering the guest worker program? Who's going to pay for finding out whether or not someone's been here 2 years, 5 years? Where's that money coming from?
Well, there's only two things that can happen. Our kids and grandkids can pay hellacious taxes,
yep,
like has never been seen before, or they can do without any benefit programs, entitlement programs whatsoever. They're going to have their choice, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I look at things like talking about how Jon Snow and Scott McClellan may be the next two out the door. And I got to tell you, one of the things that Jon Snow did is he rode shotgun over the, you know, tax reform business and the tax panel and everything. And the tax panel came back and said no national sales tax. That was their recommendation. I got to tell you, if they replaced Jon Snow with someone like John Linder, the guy that wrote that, just call it a day. It's over.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
That's going to be one to watch.
Yeah, that's so true. That is so true. Hey, well, thanks for calling. Man, it's great to hear from you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, we got some good calls today. We certainly have. I love hearing from my audience. You guys are so smart. You know what? I actually had right-winger tell me that recently. He likes listening to my program because our audience members are so well informed. That makes me happy. That really makes me happy that people on the other side recognize that fact. I've recognized it always that my listeners are very well informed. We like to think we had a little something to do with that. Hey, let's lighten this up for just a second, okay? Just a second here. If I can find this here it is. Somebody sent me this. And it's obviously we have a lot of fun with the fundies now and then, and the radical evangelicals on the right, and your Falwells and your Robertsons and all that. And somebody sent me this, and I thought you'd enjoy it. I'm going to play this for you.
Hello, Pastor. Calling you. We were at your church last Saturday night, We've been to the one when you were over in town. We were visiting. And what I noticed, First Acts 20:28 says, keep watch over yourselves and the whole faith, the whole flock, that the Holy Spirit has given you to guard. So what I'm trying to say is there is, at the music in the at first, there was a woman that was in the, on the mic in front of most of them, right in the middle there, and I noticed she was wiggling her butt back and forth from side to side as she was singing, keeping a beat. Well, then someone either made a motion to her or else she got caught on, and she then she stopped, and she went just on the one leg. She was lifting that up and down, but I thought that that was out of order, and I know you are running a good church, and I was very happy to see your maturity, and you're doing a good job. Holy Spirit's really working in you. Keep up the good work, Pastor. And God bless you, and well, this won't keep me away from there, but I hope that you will mention it to the musicians that they're not to move their butt around. It's, I'm not a freak out. I don't mean anything like that, but it's just something that has to be faced and stopped, my opinion. So God bless you guys, all of you, your whole membership, and the people that come in, the visitors, and people that bring things in. So keep doing the best you can. I'm a preacher and a minister, and an evangelist, what else, composer of music, and I also wrote a book of 1,400 things the Lord told me. So God bless you and you, all of you, and keep up the good things you're doing. And if nothing else, I'll see you in the clouds, hopefully, whatever. Bye. Hello, Pastor. Hello, Pastor. We were at your church last Saturday night. There was a woman that was in the mic, in front, right in the middle there. And I noticed she was wiggling her butt back and forth from side to side. Back and forth from side to side. She was wiggling her butt side to side. Butt back and forth from side to side. And I know you are running a good church. Good church. Move their butt around.
Play around. We do have your phone. And if you say anything untoward, obscene, or anything like that, we'll contact your local authorities and you will be held accountable.
Why, you ill-mannered sack of crap!
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now. 1-866-546-5254.
Ill-mannered sack of crap. Does that not describe O'Reilly? Absolutely. Right spot on. Does that not just hit the nail right on the head there? Hey, you do have time to give a show. We have a little fun on the program today. We're serious part of the time. I've enjoyed this show, I think, more than any show I think I've done for a long, long time. Your calls have been great, and I had some things to get off my chest, and I did, and I'm happy about that. And you were kind enough to stay and listen, and we've got a great audience today. We can always tell how many people are listening, and it's a good audience. How many of you saw the treatise, I would call it, that John Kerry put out about the war the other day? I'm damn glad that somebody in the Democratic Party, I have not been enamored with a lot of things John Kerry's done since the election. I don't think he stood up for it, but finally, he put out something about this war, and we've got something here concrete in our hand that says what we ought to do. And I'm grateful for him for doing that. He says the war can't be run, one, militarily. It's got to be won politically. No American soldier should be sacrificed because Iraqi politicians refuse to resolve their ethnic and political differences. So now we need to set another deadline to extricate our troops and get Iraq up on its own two feet. Iraqi, this is the part I like, John. Iraqi politicians should be told that they have until May 15th to put together an effective unity government, or we will immediately withdraw our military. If Iraqis aren't willing to build a unity government in the 5 months since the election, they're probably not willing to build one at all. The civil war will only get worse, and we will have no choice anyway but to leave. Right on, John Kerry. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I appreciate that, and I know lots of you do too. We've talked a lot about George Bush today. Maybe too much. I don't know. But let's be honest here. Sometimes we tend to candy coat things. I try not to. I guess most of you know I don't do too much candy coating. That's just not me. But, you know, if we're going to be honest, George W. Bush and his entire senior administration lied. And they continue to lie. Flagrantly, openly, knowingly, with full intent about the need to drive this nation into a brutal and totally unwinnable and fiscally debilitating war. One that protects no one and has inhibited no terrorism and defends nothing but Bush's own petrochemical cronies and the rest of his pals, including the PNAC group, which we talked about earlier, which if I had my way would all be doing time in Leavenworth prison by now. By now, most Americans have figured out that Bush and his gang are dangerous people. Dangerous people. Dangerous. Much of America, including myself, thinks they're dangerous because they're just plain corrupt and evil. Then there's the other group of Americans who think they're dangerous because they're incompetent. The part that irks me is that some of us warned the American people about these guys long ago. We shouted it long and loud, but we were dismissed as foolish partisans who just didn't like Bush. I'll admit here and now, I never liked George Bush. I never liked his father. I never liked his mother. I never liked his brother Jeb, his brother Neil, and that other brother of his, whatever the hell his name is. Escapes me at the moment. I never liked them because of their obvious disdain for the people of this country. You see, they're better than the rest of us. They look down upon us, much like old England's kings and royalty look down upon the serfs. We're here to work for the greater good of the Bush family, the way they see it. One only has to look at that old hag of a mother of Junior's to understand the attitude of the entire family. She personifies the attitude of that whole family. I'm not sure. I don't have to remind many of you, but I will. That old Barbara Bush didn't want to waste her beautiful mind on things like dead soldiers coming back from a war her idiot son started for no good reason. It's my hope that when Bush's reign of terror and incompetence is finally over, whether it's because his term is up or, hopefully, because the Congress of the United States find the courage to drag him through the impeachment process and convict him. However he leaves office, I hope and pray he and his entire good-for-nothing family spend the rest of their lives living in shame, ostracized by the American society, and never rear their ugly heads again in public life. I want them to just go away and not inflict any more harm on our country. They've done enough already. No family has been as disastrous to this country as this Bush family. You mark my word, in future American history books, their family name deserves to be synonymous with those of Aaron Burr, Alger Hist, and Benedict Arnold. I feel that strongly about it. And as ignominious as those other names are, none of them inflicted as much damage on this nation as has the Bush family. Just let them go away and leave us alone. Now, I'm sure some of what I just said is going to offend some of you. Some of you will think I'm a bit harsh in my assessment of the Bush family. Let me just say that I was being polite and restrained just now because my feelings about this evil bunch go far, far deeper than I want to discuss in a public forum. I hope that tells you how I feel about these people. I have no love for them. I have no respect for them. None whatsoever. Never did. Never will. And I think today, we found out one more reason, or we had it proven to us anyway, one more reason that justifies my feelings and your feelings about these people. Over and over and over again, they have betrayed the trust of the American people. The trust that good Americans, put their trust in these people and voted for them, give them the reins of our government. You know some good people, some good Republicans that voted for these guys that had the confidence in them that they thought they'd do the right thing. People were pissed off after, you know, Clinton shenanigans, and that, well, you know, let's make a change and put this guy in office. He's a good Christian man, and got God by his side, and I can't say enough about him. I really can't. Perhaps some of you think I have said enough about him, but if I were a leader in the Republican Party right now, I think I'd have a real difficult time going back to my constituents and to act like I support our president and his continuing lies and poor decisions. How could an honorable person do that? Really? Since 9/11, the Republican Party has not passed any significant law that's helped its citizens. It's as if they were out to destroy everything that I believed our country stands for. I thought the Republican Party stood for conservatism. Name me one thing this administration has done that's conservative. How is trying to interfere with someone dying with dignity being conservative? How is lying about going to war being conservative? How is supporting a president who says he'll continue to use false and deceptive information disguised as news releases being conservative? How do you tell your people that torture, rape, and murder are okay now? Have all of you forgotten that things like truth, honor, and justice in the American way? Have you forgot that if you still support this man? Just what kind of hold do these neocons have over the Republican Party to make you do the things you do? That's what I would say. The Republican leaders. When does supporting the party line, when does that become too much to stand that you got to hold your nose to do it anymore? When does it get unbearable that you can't stand in front of your constituents anymore and back up the cesspool of an administration? When does the shame overtake you? The shame that should overtake you, should have overtaken you long ago. But if it's late in getting there, the shame, when has it finally overtaken you to realize that you should not have been backing these people? When would it be time to tell people like Frist and DeLay that there's no longer any place for them in our government? DeLay is nothing but a despicable liar. We all know that, and Frist isn't much better. I'd be embarrassed to be in the same room as them. One is gone. And the other one will be gone in a couple years, but both of them will have left their mark on the Republican Party, and it's not a very good mark. If I were a leader in the Republican Party, and I know they don't want any advice from me, but I don't believe I could support this Social Security scam, the Patriot Act, or the genocide taking place in Iraq. I could never support a president who did his best to prevent an honest investigation of 9/11. I could never support a president who sat on his ass for over 7 minutes while innocent Americans were dying in the World Trade Center and did nothing. Had that look in his eye, that deer in the headlights look. There's a leader for you. I could never support an administration who outed a CIA agent and breached national security, and it came right from the top. We know that now. I suspected it all along. And I've been saying it all along. Now we have the proof. It came from the top. They're that damn petty and deceitful. Yep, if I were a leader in this Republican Party, I'd be so embarrassed that I'd have to resign. I think I got too much honor and integrity to be a member of this Republican Party right now. And you know what the sad fact is? A lot of you Republicans, of you good Republicans, of you Goldwater, Rockefeller, Eisenhower Republicans, you have too much integrity to still be in this party. And so we hear him talk now about, well, we got John McCain coming along. He'll straighten things out. Is this the John McCain we've watched this week pander to every right-wing group that comes down the highway? Is he the man that's going to save the party? I don't think so. He wants to be president so bad he can taste it. So bad that he'll bow down before Jerry Falwell. Oh, my God, I never thought I'd see the day when John McCain would do that. He and Colin Powell were two Republicans I respected. Colin gave his respect away in front of the United Nations when he put on that act that day, and I'm sure is so damn sorry for doing it now. And here we have John McCain, another Republican I always had a little respect for until lately. Now he's kissing up to Bush to get the radical right to stay with him. He's kissing up to the fundies to get them to stay with him. And I'm sad to say it, John McCain, just another political whore, just like the rest of them. So, if I were a Republican, what would I do now? What would I do? I'm not saying the Democrats are all great shakes right now either, because they're not. We don't know who the leader of the Democratic Party is right now, because no one's risen to the top. I know a couple of people I'd like to see step up and take the reins, take directions, and say, hey, come on, follow me. Have the guts to do it and stand up and say what they believe and do what they say. There's going to be a Democrat step up and do that. You mark my word, there's going to be one.